Address of the President at Scranton, Pennsylvania, Wednesday, 22nd October, 1952.
Thank you. Well, I can't tell you how very happy I am to be back in Scranton again today. Mr. Mayor, distinguished candidates for election on the Democratic ticket, this is good Democratic country. And there's nothing I like better. Nothing I like better than to visit with Democrats. I remember very well how kindly you received me when I spoke here just 4 years ago tomorrow. And I remember, too, the solid Democratic majority you gave me in the election in 1948, and I certainly appreciated it. You know, there's one thing I'm happy about. You have a good newspaper with courage to give you the facts in the Scranton Times. And I want to say to you that that sort of a newspaper is decidedly in the minority these days. I've been all over the United States, from one end of the country to the other, and about 90% of the press is against the Democrats. Anybody get hurt? Nobody's hurt, I'm glad to say. Somebody knocked out the sound equipment, but then I guess that'll be good for you. Is that all right? As you well know, I have not come here. I'm afraid the sound's gone off, but they'll get it fixed, reckon, directly. You get it fixed? Asking for anything for myself. Saying that a man could ask. I've had every honor that the party can give me. And I'm not like a lot of people who get everything out of the Democratic Party and then say I like Ike. I do like Ike, but I like him in the Army. I don't think he belongs in the White House. I'm out here campaigning for a very, very great man, the governor of Illinois, who will make you a good president, Adlai Stevenson. I'm not going to give you a lecture about Governor Stevenson today. He'll be here to speak for himself next week on John Mitchell Day. Then you'll have a chance to see for yourselves that he is the best new leader to emerge in this country since another governor went to Washington in 1932, Franklin Roosevelt. I hope you'll enjoy his visit. John Mitchell Day in Scranton is always a good day, for John Mitchell was a good man and a great trade union leader. And after it is over, I hope you'll go out and vote for Adlai Stevenson, and I'm sure that's exactly what Scranton's going to do. He's a man we need as president these next 4 years. And to support him, we will need a real working majority of liberal Democrats in the Congress. We need men like Judge Bard in the Senate. Take a bow, Judge. To help our new president and carry out the pledges of the Democratic Party, we need men like Harry O'Neill in the House of Representatives. Everybody's been yelling at the car I'm in this morning, give them hell, Harry, and I thought they were talking to Harry O'Neill. I urge you to vote for all these candidates on November the 4th. They're good Democrats and your friends. Your interest and your country's interest will be safe with them. You people here in Scranton know how important it is to have a national administration that is concerned about your problems and anxious to help you to solve them. Harry O'Neill and your Democratic Party leaders have done a great deal to get new contracts in here and to create new job opportunities. That's because the Democrats believe in using the power of the government for the benefit of all the people and not for just a few. Yay! For 20 years, the Democratic Party has been working to promote the interests and the welfare of the plain people in this country. That was the meaning and the purpose of Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal and of Harry Truman's Fair Deal. During this whole period, for 3 years and 11 months out of every 4 years, we've had to fight off Republican attempts to wreck the programs that were put on the books by the New Deal and the Fair Deal. At every session of Congress, as Harry O'Neill can tell you, we've had a struggle with the Republican obstructionists. They have put things in the way of every progressive measure we've offered. This goes on all time, day in and day out, until the last few weeks of a campaign for president. And then they come around and try to tell you that they've been for everything. Then suddenly, as you find out, the Republican candidates begin to take an interest in the people, begin to sing a strange new song to the country. It is called the Me Too song. It's a marvelous thing to hear. You may remember the old story about the maidens who sat on a rock and sang sweet songs to addle the reins of passing sailors and caused their ships to crash. Well, a Republican song at this time in election year is just about the same thing. It is intended to beguile the voters and to addle their brains and cause them to go crashing on the rocks of a Republican victory in the election. This year, the Republican candidate for president spent the first 6 weeks of the campaign embracing all the reactionary leaders in his party. Republican record of obstruction in the Congress. Indeed, Senator Taft, Mr. Republican himself, received the special privilege of telling the country on the candidate's behalf that they were in complete agreement on all domestic issues. Don't forget that now. He's in complete agreement with Taft on all domestic issues. First, the Republican candidate embraced the old guard leaders and their record, too. And a few days ago, came a sweet singing began. The Me Too song was heard in the land, just as Wilkie sang it, and just Dewey sang it. There's a verse of this song for almost every issue. Today, I have time only to tell you of one, the Me Too version of Social Security. Now, it's a matter of plain fact that our original Social Security law was one of the great accomplishments of the Franklin Roosevelt New Deal. And it is also a fact that the big expansion of Social Security was put through by the Fair Deal after the election of 1948. And finally, it is a fact that right from the beginning, the great majority of the Republicans in the Congress have fought, blocked, and hampered our Social Security program. Yet the Republican candidate for president spoke in Los Angeles a few days ago and claimed that his party was in favor of Social Security. Now beat that if you can. And wanted to improve and expand it. He even made a startling assertion, and I quote him directly, that Social Security law was a bipartisan law. He called it bipartisan and said the overwhelming majority of his party voted for it. That, my friend, is taking extreme liberty with the truth. I'm not sure, of course, that the candidate was deliberately trying to deceive the people. It may well be that he just doesn't know the facts of his party's record. But whether he knows the facts or not, I think you ought to know them, and so I'm going to give them to you. Here's the record. In 1935... the Republican congressman voted 95-1 to eliminate old age insurance from the original Social Security bill. In 1936, the Republicans tried to win the election by making Social Security an issue. Their candidate for president, and I bet you can't name him, their candidate for president called it a cruel hoax and actually advocated its repeal. In 1939, the Republican senators voted 9-1 against raising the old age of sister states. In 1948, the Republican 80th Congress, that terrible Congress on which I won the election, passed a bill over my veto that took the protection away from nearly 1 million people. The Republicans in both houses voted overwhelmingly for that proposition. 1949, the Republican congressman voted 4-1 to cripple the great Social Security expansion we put through that year. And just this year, in 1952, almost two-thirds of the Republican congressmen voted against the bill that would increase Social Security benefits. Now let me give you one word of warning. The Republicans have tried to make much of the fact that on a few occasions, a majority of their senators and congressmen voted for final passage of Social Security bills. That has been so, but it does not change the facts as I've given them to you. The Republicans, you see, have a favorite trick. It's an old trick, as Congressman O'Neill can tell you, which they use all the time to confuse the voters and obscure their real intentions. They will fight as hard as they can against a progressive bill, voting for crippling amendments or voting for a recommittal motion, which would turn the bill back to committee and bury it there. Then, if we defeat them on all these efforts, they sometimes go along, thus making a record to take home to their unwary constituents. That's what they did on the original Social Security bill in 1935, and again one time this year. But if you look into the real votes, the key votes, the ones that make the difference between good laws and bad, you find most of the Republicans on the wrong side time after time, just as I've demonstrated here today. There's one other word of warning I would give you. The Me Too statements of the Republican candidate, he is now making these Me Too statements about our Social Security laws. They apply only to his party's record and intentions, but to his own personal position. In his speech in Los Angeles, he said of Social Security, "This is a matter that is much on my heart." Well, if the security of our people is much on his heart, it has only recently arrived at his heart. It's only been there 3 years since this candidate, speaking for himself, not as a politician, told an audience in Texas, and I quote him, "If all the Americans want is security, they can go to prison. They'll have enough to eat, bed to sleep on, and a roof over their head." On another occasion, he said, "In these times, we hear so much of security, I should think the best example of it would be a man serving a lifetime prison sentence." Now, which would you rather do, have Social Security or go to jail? Answer me. My friend, it's been 20 years since we had in the White House a man who did not really feel deeply and personally the needs and the rights of his fellow citizens for a secure livelihood and a secure future. Yet now, the Republicans offer you a man who has had complete Social Security in the Army all his life, but he has scorned the needs of others, except in that brief interval of time, the Me Too phase of the Republican campaign in a presidential election year. Think, my friends, think hard. Where would you be? Where would our country be if we were dependent on a party with the kind of a record I've described, or on a president with the basic attitude this man expressed before he became a candidate for public office? I think that is a risk you cannot afford to take. Don't listen merely to the songs these people sing to you now. Look at the record. Look at what they've done and said in all the years past. I urge upon you to think of your own interests. Remember that you, the people, have the right and the duty to choose the kind of a government which shall rule this country. And it's your business to go to the polls on election day and exercise your right to tell the country what it should do for the next 4 years. The choice is up to you. When you go to the polls, register that choice. Vote for yourself. Vote for what helps you. Vote in your own interest, and vote for the best interests of the country. And when you do that, we'll have a Democratic administration for the next 4 years, and the country and the world will be safe. Thank you a lot.